This podcast does not constitute financial or investment advice. It is for educational, general information, and entertainment purposes only. Please consult with your own financial advisor before making any financial decisions.
I think the first time we really saw a regulatory authority going after a finfluencer, who was actually an influencer and turned finfluencer, was with, of course, with Kim Kardashian. We all know Kim Kardashian. Yeah, I used to quite like seeing what she was advising on makeup and lifestyle. It's fun. And then she suddenly started talking about cryptocurrencies. And that was perhaps less fun, you know, because what does she know about cryptocurrencies?
You're listening to Banking on Girls, the podcast that explores the importance of financial literacy for girls and young women. And I'm your host, Marina Batmiwala. Join me on this journey to uncover insights and inspiration. Hi, everyone. If you have a child who spends time on social media, then you are not going to want to miss today's episode. I recently came across a study published by the CFA Institute called The Finfluencer Appeal, Investing in the Age of Social Media. And here today to dive into some of these very important findings from the study is my guest, Josina Kamerling, the Head of Regulatory Outreach for the Europe, Middle East and Africa region for the CFA Institute, an organization that provides investment professionals globally with finance education and promotes standards in ethics and professional excellence. Above all, Josina also has a teenage daughter, so I'm so excited to have her here today. Josina, welcome.
Thank you so much, Marina. And of course, we both share that we have teenage daughters and we love them dearly. We as mothers want to protect them, but we also realize that we have to live in the new age when social media does count and is a tool for teenagers.
Yes. So let's begin at the beginning. For those of us parents who perhaps don't spend as much time on social media as our children do, what exactly is a finfluencer?
So a finfluencer, of course, if you take away the F, you have influencer. Now, to those parents that don't go on social media, an influencer typically is a recognizable person, whether it's an actress, whether it's someone who just generates a lot of publicity because of their lifestyle or anything else, and that appears regularly on social media and gives advice on their lifestyle, whether it's food, clothes, places to go to, and that in turn generates marketing, and companies that see that lifestyle being appealing to them go to that influencer. Now, the finfluencer with the F in front is those influencers that speak about financial products. That is a mixture because, of course, finance traditionally, financial advice has been in the hands of bankers, investment advisors, etc. And it's the first time that this sort of settled banking, finance, asset management industry encounters people who are from the outside and who dare to talk about financial products to a whole new generation, which is the Generation Z.
Which are the most prevalent social media platforms where young consumers, particularly Gen Z or Gen Z, are finding and following these finfluencers?
Yeah, I think the three that stand out most is YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. But they all have very different uses. And I think this is something that our research also found out, is that when you talk about guidance, which is just vaguely mentioning a product and saying, oh, well, you know, I've encountered this, typically that seems to go most on Instagram and TikTok. And YouTube is very little involved in that. So it seems to just be a quick, oh, yeah, I've heard this and thing. And so Instagram and TikTok are the media for that. When you go to, let's say, more recommendations and actually promotion, the promotion where you actually market actively, then YouTube is the channel to go to. And that's quite interesting because I, being a baby boomer, hadn't really thought about, you know, the differences between these social platforms.
Yes, that is interesting. And we can get into this a little bit more, but each of those platforms have their own types of protections, which may not be enough, but they do have different ways of dealing with bad actors. So we can maybe talk about that in a little bit. Why do you think the younger generation really trusts and believes finfluencers?
So I'm going to give you an example for my own daughter, who's 17 now. I hope she will listen to this podcast. I would be delighted if she did, because, of course, teenagers don't listen to their parents. We know that, right? When she was smaller and she had a phone and she was doing homework, probably last years of primary school, beginning of her secondary school, I said, oh, listen, you know, mommy can help you with homework. Oh, no, I talk to Siri or just go on Google, mommy. No, I don't need you, actually. And that was the first twinkle that, okay, this is a different generation. You know, they look at their phones. She's far more phone literate than I am, which is also a shock. I mean, she is able to tell me, oh, this is not good and that's not good. And I had to do really a very quick course on understanding how to protect her. But what was interesting, sort of going now back into CFA Institute and how we discovered Generation Z's, let's say, attachment to social media and how that could be influencing financial advice, we realized that investors under the age of 34 and really Generation Z, that segment, trust social media far more than they would trust, let's say, a personal advisor or whatever. And this comes, of course, from having grown up with their phones. They're so used to holding that phone and going to it for everything. It is easy. You know, I mean, I'm of a generation when I was at school, I had to go to a library, pick up a reference book and find out about things. Now you'd go on Google or TikTok or whatever, and you say, oh, I need to know, you know, about this. And ChatGPT has even more changed the game, of course. So it is very easy in a way to get information. They trust the phone. So you have this natural bias to everything that social media says must be right. And so this is dangerous. Our study, which we actually did jointly with FINRA back in 2023, which is really looking at investor education, investor protection, is that Generation Z is really very fragile. And it is very predisposed to harms associated with online advice, whether it's lifestyle, whether it's investment advice, whatever, because it's very easy to hide what is going on. You know, we'll talk later about what are the measures of protection, etc. But, you know, you see a little film on YouTube and it's very easy to just take that and not see the hidden messages coming into it. It's a big challenge for regulators and for watchdogs and for sort of supervision authorities in different countries around the world. And Marina, let me just tell you that the International Organization of Security Supervisors around the globe is called IOSCO. They have been focusing on this for the last 3 years and telling authorities in every single state throughout the world that it is dangerous and that it needs to be acted on, that perhaps our financial regulation is not really fit for purpose for dealing with this kind of new way of marketing investment advice. It's difficult, you know, Marina. Regulation laws change very slowly. I deal with laws in Europe, and I see that it takes a life cycle of about 7 years to fruition for a law to start and to come into effect. So with the enormous game-changing world we're in with artificial intelligence and fintech and social media platforms, change happens far faster than that. And this really is a challenge, I think.
Yes. I mean, you raised so many issues there. And kudos to the CFA Institute for bringing all those issues together in one paper around regulators, around companies in the space, and around social media. We can go into this now, but the social media platforms do have some protections, but they're very minimal compared to the kind of protections we need to be seeing for our children.
They are. I was reflecting on before this podcast on a little bit on those protections. And there are social media laws, not specifically regarding finfluencers, but more regarding influencers and what's appearing on social media. And some countries have said, you know, parents need to give parental authorization for children to go on social media, or a cutoff limit. We know that Google, for example, and I know that as a mother, when I opened an account for my daughter, I had to give an authorization and I have control over what she's seeing, and I could somehow more or less control the kind of content she was seeing on YouTube. But it's so easy to bypass. That's the first thing, because I was checking my daughter's social media, and actually it's really easy to bypass. And the checking doesn't really happen that effectively, I would say. And then you have, when you go then to the finfluencers part, it's even more vague. And it's quite hard. I think the first time we really saw a regulatory authority going after a finfluencer, who was actually an influencer and turned finfluencer, was with, of course, with Kim Kardashian. We all know Kim Kardashian. Yeah, I used to quite like seeing what she was advising on makeup and lifestyle. It's fun. And then she suddenly started talking about cryptocurrencies. And that was perhaps less fun, you know, because what does she know about cryptocurrencies? And I think quite rightly, she was probably made a scapegoat. I mean, I think she had a hefty fine. I can't remember. It was $1 million or $1.7, something quite significant. It highlighted, and I think it appeared in a lot of press. And I think that, again, I mean, even my daughter read about it. So I think it was necessary. It's necessary to attack high-profile cases. And we see also, to give you another example, more in the influencer side, I know that Chiara Ferragni, who is a very famous Italian influencer on lifestyle and fashion and makeup and whatever, actually started actively promoting a special kind of Christmas panettone, they call it in Italy, Christmas cakes. And it was discovered that actually she had a real remuneration from this, and that it was totally unethical. And the company had said, we're going to give the prices more, but we're going to give it to charity. And of course, it was blatantly untrue. And so it's been such a scandal. And I think that, again, was also good that it came up and that it reflected, you know, why would we suspect an influencer selling Christmas cakes to be mis-selling? So if that is happening in that ambience, yes, where a Christmas cake can lead to fraud, you know, we can imagine that if you start selling and promoting financial products, this is going to be even more the case.
Yes. And I think one of the interesting points raised is, I mean, there clearly can be bad actors who know they are doing bad things, but there's a whole segment of influencers who don't even know they're in a regulatory environment they need to be paying attention to, which is very frightening.
Yes, but it's normal. When you're an influencer, you start off probably, you know, just you start off posting a lot of stuff on Instagram. You become known. I think, I mean, I'll take Chiara Ferragni because it was quite fascinating to me to read her story. She was actually a university student studying, I think, economics or something in Italy. And she loved fashion and started just posting pictures on Instagram. And it led to having, I don't know, I think at her high time, she had about 30 million followers or something extraordinary. You know, I mean, would that I get so many followers? You know, I mean, it's amazing. And of course, when companies see 30 million followers, they say, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And then they come to them. And well, Chiara Ferragni didn't sell financial products, but there are a host of other ones that do, with quite a few followers. And so it goes to their heads. And if the financial company coming to them doesn't say, well, we need to train you because you're actually selling something that is dangerous. And if the regulator behind the financial company doesn't know that the financial company is selling part of their financial products through social media with a finfluencer, then it can easily go wrong.
What type of regulations is the CFA Institute recommending for policymakers, just sort of recognizing this is a multi-year, maybe multi-decade process?
So I think there are really three different ways, as I mentioned in the beginning. You can give guidance where you don't really recommend a specific buy, but you just give information, and that typically gets then transformed into financial education. I've seen finfluencers giving financial education. But even that, of course, is dangerous, because do they give the right education? Do they talk about the right things? So, but that's the first part. Then you go to the promotion, and then the finfluencer is actually paid to advertise an investment product or a platform, or provides a link to a promotional offer, but they will actually benefit from that financially. And then you have the recommendation, where they actually recommend to buy a stock, a share, or a bond, or a cryptocurrency, or whatever. And that, again, is one step further. So I think the three have to be taken separately. But I think at the basis where CFA Institute stands is that there is a shared responsibility. The social platform has to have some controls and understand who is doing what and act as a watchdog. That is logical. Just when we used to have paper journals and paper press, the editor would control editorial content. So it's quite logical that you do have some kind of control by the platform. But the bigger responsibility goes to the financial companies and behind them, the regulator. The regulator needs to set up some kind of channel or reporting structure where the reporting the financial company does is saying, well, we're advertising our products through, you know, the financial channels or just talking through the distribution channels, the typical financial distribution channels. We're doing it in the press. We're doing it on social media. And then it is also incumbent on the regulator to say to that financial company, oh, you're going on social media. So how are you controlling how the selling is happening? And there needs to be really a compliance function within the financial company that is able to talk to the regulator to explain how they're setting up these controls. But also the financial company's compliance department will need to talk to the finfluencer. And perhaps the financial company will need to set up some kind of training that the finfluencer does understand the basics of what it's trying to do. So this really, we're starting to see discussions about this at the lawmaking stages. And it's interesting because in Europe, at the moment, there is a file going through the European legislative process, which it was about retail investment. It's called the Retail Investment Strategy. And within that, there is now a portion and some articles dedicated to finfluencers. And a start is indeed saying regulators have to be involved. They have to set up a channel of reporting. The financial company has to look on training and on making sure that the content they want to have on that finfluencer's social channel is correct. And then the finfluencer needs to be made aware. And now, whether it's the regulatory training or whether it's the financial company, that all still needs to be worked out because it's very new, all of this.
Yes, and that's exactly the point. It seems that finfluencers are actually disrupting the investment advice industry. I mean, we're talking about the younger generation not really wanting to get advice through the traditional channels, either because they don't trust or because they don't feel they can or want to pay. And they have a whole different mechanism to screen this advice out. And one of the mechanisms is how many followers these people have, which is not necessarily a credible way of evaluating the information that you're getting.
And you know, Marina, another thing that is also important is that, of course, social media are global. And so where regulators in a certain country can think of the bias of the national bias, and they will know schools in a certain country, probably some of them have financial education or not. In some countries, the consumer protection is stronger than in others. And so, you know, each country has its own defined protection measures. But because it's global, to be honest, it's really, I'll give you another personal example, which was before social media, but it was also related to how financial investment can go haywire very quickly. Yes. I'm married to a Greek national, and his mother was a lovely Greek grandmother living in a village. And she, when at the start of when I met my husband, she said, oh, you work in banking. I was a banker before then. Well, you know, the Greek stock market is becoming really interesting and I'm going to invest. I said, hang on. You know, she's a lovely grandmother of 80 something. She had no idea what the stock market was, but some kind of bank had said to her, well, it might be interesting. And so she did invest. And of course, you know, the Greek debt crisis came along and all the stock market imploded. And I had told her, I said, you know, when you're an individual person, you're always the last. It's the big equity funds. It's the big asset managers who are going to pull out before you and you'll be left with the dregs. She didn't understand this. Now, on social media, of course, this is amplified by X. And so you start to see the challenges that we have in front of us.
Yes, some very big risks that we and our children are facing, honestly, when it comes to consuming all this content. So, Jacina, you and I, we're parents of teens. What are the conversations that we should be having with our kids when they see social media around investing and finance?
It probably, if we leave it to the stage when they are on social media, i.e. teenagers, it's probably already too late. I would say we have to start at primary school. And I was very interested by a Polish family office who have been promoting financial education to primary schools throughout Europe. And they've actually produced a book translated into 6 different European languages, which explains very clearly to primary school pupils what is a bank, what is borrowing, what does it mean? You know, what a credit card, it's not just to put in a hole in the wall and take money out. It actually means something. So in a very basic way, they start explaining the basic issues of finance. Then when they get to the secondary school, you can slowly introduce them to the world of investment so that hopefully by the time they have really actively engagement on social media, something at the back might say, maybe, you know, not so good. I would say it's not just the parents, it's also the schools. It's from both sides. Parents, they know when their children start on social media. They also know if some children are more advanced than others. So they know when to start this process. But I said you need to start early on discussing what is your financial well-being in a very simple way and keep growing with it. And then, you know, take examples from YouTube and show them examples. And then in connection with the school, who then establishes a financial education program that is then led through, that is going to help.
Yes, yes. In the United States, we are working on compulsory high school financial education. There's still a long way to go. So there's still a lot of onus on parents to get up to speed and help their kids. I would consider this podcast a form of financial education, particularly for parents. And I know there's some recommendations for financial educators as well in the study. And a lot of that goes to helping the younger generation critically evaluate the information that they're getting in terms of understanding the motivations behind any advice or education, understanding the qualifications behind the person giving that information, and then trying to sort of cross-check for consistency. So I think those are really great guidelines for people like myself as well.
You know, what I think is interesting is that some regulators have started publishing cartoons on YouTube where they explain how financial products work. And I think it's very visual. And some regulators have even employed finfluencers themselves, trained them. And then it says, this finfluencer is acting under the authorization of this supervision authority, government, whatever you want to say. And I think that is, you know, if you as a parent see that, you can say, listen to your child, look at this. This is an official one. Compare and contrast, you know, and you can start building differences with them. But I think this is true. We need to engage in the way that Generation Z is engaging. So otherwise they say, oh, you know, you don't understand. You know, you don't even know what buttons to press on a phone, let alone you understand what social media is about. So we need to be in there with them. And I think also what I tell regulators is that, you know, regulators and government authorities, they have stakeholder groups who they engage with and say, is this law fit for purpose, and et cetera. Actually, they need to get young people involved in these stakeholder groups. Children, they need to create a children's group, you know, and touch base with them. And I think that's the way we need to grow.
Yeah, those are very, very good ideas and thoughts. Jacina Kamling, thank you so much for your time today. I do hope we can come back and have a follow-up conversation on this. I have a feeling this is going to be a very popular topic.
With great pleasure. I love engaging on this because I believe that, yeah, as parents, we have a duty to help and to stand beside our children as they evolve in this very complex world.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Banking on Goals podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate the podcast and be sure to hit subscribe or follow so you can receive notifications of new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and at bankingongoals.com.